Welcome to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding Love, with me, Elizabeth Cunningham. My mission is to expand the conversation of love in the world. Is it possible to have deep, loving, healthy relationships? Have you ever been curious about having more than one relationship or partner at a time? Get ready to transform in love. Be courageous and set yourself free. In this show, we talk about relationships, sex, love, and the ways we wish we could be, but never thought were possible. The Elizabeth Cunningham Show starts now. Welcome to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding in Love. And today we are talking about somatic work. But before we get into that and introduce our phenomenal guest, a reminder that the Elizabeth Cunningham Show is live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Transformation Network Facebook page and is then aired on YouTube and podcast every single Thursday. All links are in the show notes so that you don't have to even pay attention to what I'm saying. All you have to do is scroll down, click on the link, and then hit the notification button, and you will make sure to not miss an episode. So on today's episode, we will be talking with Megan Arrow about somatic work. Megan is a trauma-informed somatic coach who helps people bridge the gap between their conscious thinking minds and their subconscious through learning the language of the body. She ran her own business for 7 years as a corrective exercise coach, yoga instructor, and wellness educator. Her most passionate work during that time involved helping clients gain more access to pain-free movement and in turn changing their perception of their body. She came into the world of somatic therapy through their own desire to heal past traumas and came to a deeper understanding that the mind-body psychology that they were learning was the other side of the coin to the work that they had previously been doing in the wellness industry. Somatic healing provided a new lens through which she's been able to experience healing and growth that she never believed was possible. And because of these experiences, she's decided to pursue this work herself. Thank you so much for being here, Megan.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. This is great.
I know, super fun, right? Yeah. Well, and today we're not just talking about somatic work, but we're also talking about somatic work in the context of non-monogamy. And as the people who listen to the show know, I really like to lay the foundations of really what it is that we're talking about. So can you share just from your perspective, what is somatic work? We'll stop. I'll just ask one question at a time. What is somatic work? What does that mean?
Yeah, so somatic work is really about understanding how our bodies speak to us. And it's primarily really focused on the autonomic nervous system. So the autonomic nervous system controls everything that is automatic in our bodies. So if you think about digestion, your heart rate, your breath, even sexual arousal, and also, you know, all of our survival instincts live there as well. And so that is a really big part of, you know, getting into this work is understanding when we are going into survival strategies, being able to notice and understand this is what I'm doing in order to, you know, quote, survive right now. And obviously, you know, in our modern worlds, you know, it's not life or death, but our bodies are still operating through that lens, right? The nervous system doesn't do nuance. It's very black and white. It's like, is this safe or is this dangerous? And all of the nuance comes from our conscious thinking minds. So we can filter through and we can, you know, understand, okay, we logically know this isn't a life or death situation, right? But your body is still going into a survival strategy. And so when we start to understand this, when we start to look through this lens of like, what is the nervous system doing? What is the body doing right now? We understand our own behavior a lot better. And from that perspective, we can actually start to have a lot more choice in how we want to show up in the world, in who we want to be in the world. So somatic work is really about, you know, like you said in the intro, bridging that gap between mind and body. How do I align these two things so that I can actually start to live in a way that feels true to me, so that, you know, these two pieces of myself aren't at odds with one another.
Yeah. I often, before talking about this work with clients, what I will, I'll use words that are kind of inappropriate, where it's like, oh, it's like, you don't feel safe. And they'll be like, no, I feel safe. But it's really like, it's really that nuance. Like, we know the nuance, like you said, like, we know that we are safe, but like recognizing that your body is saying, I'm not safe here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And it can be really difficult when people are first starting off, you know, diving into this work, to kind of set that aside, you know, to like, some of my clients will have a strong reaction to, like, you know, the word safety or danger, because that doesn't feel resonant for them. So we can use the words, you know, does it like welcome or warning? Are we protecting or are we connecting? Right. There are different ways to describe it, but at its most basic layer, the body is perceiving danger or it's perceiving safety.
Got it. Yeah. I really like the protecting or connecting bit as well. That really, I'm like, oh, I'm going to steal that. Like, I love doing the show because I get to steal stuff too. Yes. But it really is. Yeah. That really resonates. And it is kind of like resonating with the conscious mind. So it's like, oh, I connect to that. So now I can go deeper into, you know, the somatic work and the body and actually recognizing that. That makes total sense. So I want to, I know we got a little bit later start in the show. So we're just going to skip the break because I would love to hear also, what is your kind of working definition of non-monogamy?
I understand non-monogamy, and I just want to preface this with, like, I am not currently practicing non-monogamy. It's something that I've dabbled in, and it's something that, like, you know, I think that I view polyamory or non-monogamy through, like, almost like an identifier, the same way like someone might identify as like gay or straight. Like, I think that I feel like I am someone who identifies as polyamorous because I have the experience of being able to hold feelings for, you know, multiple people at the same time. And that feels true to me, whether or not I'm practicing. But right now I'm not practicing, so I just want to preface that. But my understanding of non-monogamy is, you know, just having the ability to choose how you want to form relationships and understanding. Like, I think that I subscribe to the mental model of like relationship anarchy, the idea that there's all of these different relational needs that fall into all of these different buckets, these different categories. And we can actually pick and choose where we want to get those needs met and in what combination and with who.
Yeah, I really love that. And I, you know, for me, what resonates in that is being able to consciously choose how you want to relate to someone, regardless of like societal structures or what we're quote unquote supposed to do, you know, or how we've been taught. It's like, no, I like this person or I love this person for these reasons. And this makes sense and how we want to relate to one another. And we're adults. And so we negotiate that. And so this is what it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, that society has taught us, like mainstream society has taught us that, you know, there are all of these scripts and templates for life that we can just, that we're supposed to just fall into. And I think that relationships are something that we have to consciously be cultivating, we have to consciously be choosing how we're relating to people, or else they just kind of go stale, right? The thing, it's a living, breathing thing. And I think that, you know, when we fall into these templates, there's a lot that we're agreeing to that we might not even be recognizing that we're agreeing to or not agreeing to. And that's where we get, you know, a lot of conflict in relationship, because needs and boundaries were never actually discussed. The expectations were never actually discussed. We just entered into this under the assumption that, like, okay, you're my partner. What does that mean? What needs are we filling for one another?
I absolutely love and adore everything that you just said. Yes, 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 yes. Subscribe to all of that. because it's true, when we enter into a presupposed, like, you know, you're my girlfriend or you're my fiance or you're my, you know, whatever fill in the blank word that we want to use, then we have these either conscious or unconscious expectations of how that relationship should go, how this person should be, how we should be with them, you know, all of that. And it's kind of left unchecked, right? Mm-hmm. And and so super fascinating. So what do you see in tying this into the work that you do? What are some of the things that arise for people when they're entering into relationships, either, like, you know, as we're talking about in non-monogamy, either discovering how they want to relate, or they're going into relationships a little bit unconscious and just being like, oh, I think that this person's my, you know, boyfriend or whatever, and so therefore this about this relationship, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's this work and relationships in general is incredibly tied, because I think that our survival strategies probably come out the most in intimate relationships with people. That it's a very scary thing, you know, it is literally encoded into our bodies to, you know, seek out connection, to seek out partnership. And when we're not really conscious to the ways in which we're doing that, you know, we will do anything to keep it, right? And so particularly when we're talking about non-monogamy, we don't have mainstream scripts for this, right? Everything in our world and pop culture is teaching us from a very young age that, you know, our significant other having feelings for another person, even being attracted to another person, is a very dangerous thing, and that, like, you should be jealous. And so that our bodies have, you know, subscribed to that. Our bodies have, you know, decided that this, we understand this is a very dangerous thing. And it's so hard to break that. I know for myself, when I was, you know, getting into, you know, dabbling in non-monogamy, it was this very intense pull between, like, I know I want this thing, but my body is having such intense reactions to this. It's so hard. It's so scary. You know, feeling like your stomach is, you know, tying itself up in knots at the thought of, you know, your partner going out on a date when, like, this is something that you agreed to, right? And it's like, how do we start to bridge that? How do we start to, like, create enough safety so that you can experience all the good things about it, the things that you want from it?
Yeah. Well, and before we get into, like, the how-to of that, What are some of just the individual impacts of feeling this? And again, I know that some of these words seem a little big, right? Like fear and scary and, like, all of this stuff. And so maybe say a little bit more about more of, like, the nuance of what someone might be feeling when your body is having these, like what would be the conscious thoughts that are in correlation with like scary body feelings when you're entering into non-monogamy?
Yeah. I mean, I think for a lot of people, it's this fear that, you know, their partner's going to like someone else better. Right. Or, you know, maybe, you know, they'll leave you for another person, or maybe, you know, you don't measure up in this ways. Maybe they're comparing the two of you. You know, maybe you're feeling jealous. Maybe, you know, it's usually kind of come out in jealousy. And jealousy is such an interesting emotion because it's just a sign that there are needs being unmet, right? And so if we can look at it from that perspective, we can actually action it. We can actually do something about the feeling of jealousy. But a lot of us were never actually taught how to be with the feeling of jealousy. It's a very hard emotion to be with.
Well, and there's also a lot of stories around jealousy too, like talking about, you know, societal scripts, like jealousy has such ingrained societal scripts as well. Mm-hmm. Where it's like some of the stories are like, well, if you feel jealous, then that's really good because then that means that you really, truly love your partner. Or if you feel jealous, then that's really bad because that means that your partner is doing something that they shouldn't be doing. And so, you know, your partner is bad. And so you need to do something about that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I love talking about jealousy as far as like the actionable steps of it, because like you said, you know, it is the thing, not the thing, that's not the words that I wanted, but it is, it is an emotion where once you unpack it, that then it is super actionable. It's like, oh, okay. Like what is underneath this? Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think like that sums up like the work that I do, not specifically with jealousy, but it's like, how do I hold this emotion? How do I allow myself to feel it? And then from that experience of being in it, I'm able to gather all of this information about myself, and then I can action it. What needs to happen on the other side of this? But first, before I can even action, I have to hold this for myself. I have to feel it. I have to like learn how to be in it so that I can be conscious to it. Because if I can't actually feel it first, I'm going to sidestep all of the information that it has for me.
Oh my gosh, I want every single person in the world to know exactly what you just said, because that is seriously, because that is it. That is it. And that's what I see people doing as well. They're like, I feel this thing. I don't want to feel this thing. I just want to know how to get out of it. When like if you bypass all of that, then you're doing yourself a disservice. You're not going to learn anything. You're not going to grow. It's going to continue to happen. You're going to keep being frustrated about it. And then you're going to start blaming outside things too. Like, that's what I see. It's like, oh, well, polyamory is bad because I can't move past this, or my partner is bad, or my meta is bad, or, you know, whatever, you know, we like start to place blame outside because like we've bypassed this ridiculously important part of being with that emotion and being, and asking the question, like, what does this mean? What is here?
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is where, you know, I always tell my clients, you know, we want to take all of your emotions seriously because that is your truth. We don't have to take them literally though, right? So there's like the way that I understand the nervous system, the way that like somatic psychology, not the way I understand, the way somatic psychology understands the nervous system. Give me a lot of credit. is that, you know, we can think about it as kind of like the first barrier of entry to you as a person, right? So like stimuli, information comes in through the nervous system. The nervous system creates sensation in the body, the internal sensation, you know, like the feeling of butterflies in your stomach, or, you know, like getting tight in your chest, or, you know, those internal sensations that come from inside the body. And then we experience them in accordance with our emotions. So we're kind of working our way up. Emotions come from the sensations. And then we create thoughts based on our emotions. And so this is where we get into like the stories that we're telling ourselves. And so then it works its way back down, right? The stories then go back down, you know, like into emotions. The way we think affects the way we feel. And then it goes back down. And so it's kind of like a cycle, a loop that's happening. And so when we don't know how to stay in the emotion, when we don't know how to feel it, we can't actually really interrupt that cycle very well. The stories stay because we haven't actually felt the emotion.
Mm. Oh my gosh. Yes, exactly. No bypassing. Anybody who's listening to this, no bypassing. No bypassing the emotion. Because you're absolutely right. It does. It stays in that cycle. That's such a beautiful way of explaining that too. And it does, and it stays in that cycle, and then we're not able to interrupt it. And then all of the problems that you're having, or all of the things that you're running into, or all of those stuck points just stay there.
Yeah, exactly. But we first have to build enough safety to experience the motion as it is, right? And this is where, you know, we get into a place where we have to constantly ask ourselves, like, what is our capacity? What is my capacity to be with this emotion right now? Because it's not actually, it's a survival strategy to bypass the emotion, right? That's your body saying like, yo, I do not have this. I cannot dive into this, right? And that's very intelligent. It's very intelligent to, you know, numb out essentially when we don't have the capacity to be with something. But we want to make that a conscious choice rather than an unconscious habit, right? Yeah. We want to say, I don't have capacity to sit with this right now. I'm going to do something else to get myself feeling a little bit more regulated, a little bit more safe in my body. And then I'm going to make a note to come back to this.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back from break, what I would love to do is to go into that. Okay, how do we build that layer of safety? What do we do? And I would love to hear more about, yeah, like the, what do we do now? Okay, great. We know what this is. We know what it impacts us, but yeah, what do we do now? So when we get back from break, that's what we'll talk about.
Do you want to come back to yourself? To come back to your own power? To come back to your dreams? Dr. Tassel Shanebrook will help you utilize transformational mindset and energy techniques to superpower your conscious and subconscious mind so you can be your own hero. Enjoy the relationship of your dreams, your best feeling body, financial abundance, free time, and ease. You are the one you have been seeking. Visit drtassel.com to find out more.
Is it time you finally did that thing you've always wanted to do, or did it way better, or fixed that problem you've been having for ages? It is time to build something incredible with Sam Bell as your coach, educator, and healer. You've heard her on the Angel Empowerment Show, and she is committed to helping you to stop existing and start living. Book coaching, healing, or angel card sessions at sambellinspired.com.
Juggling life's relentless demands can leave us unbalanced and restless. Do you feel stuck in the overwhelm? Diane McClay is a personal empowerment coach, author, and compassionate storyteller on a mission to boost you into balance and help you move forward with passion and purpose. Get unstuck with Diane on The Diane McClay Show every second and fourth Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Diane, visit DianeMcClay.com. Yes.
Expanding in Love. And we are here with Megan, and she is a somatic coach. And we are talking about what happens in somatic work, what it is about, how it impacts your relationships, and what it really looks like kind of in practice in your life. And what we're talking about now is, okay, so we got kind of the groundwork of the impact of not necessarily doing the somatic work. And so moving into when you do this work, how do you do it? What's possible inside of that? And one of the things we were talking about before break is creating this layer of safety, or creating safety. I'm not going to say it as good as you do, because this is what you do. But talk to us a little bit about what does that mean to create safety?
Yeah. So one of the first exercises I do with any of my clients who start working with me is I have them start to create like a living document where we are starting to notice, what are my body's cues of safety and what are my body's cues of danger? Usually it's a lot harder for them to come up with the cues of safety. That takes a little bit of time for them to be able to actually start to understand what that means for them. Usually the cues of danger are a little bit easier to fill out. And we look at them in three different categories. So we look at them, you know, internally inside the body. So, you know, for example, people who maybe have struggled with eating disorders in the past, like if their clothing feels a little too tight on them, right? That might be a trigger. That might mean, you know, okay, my body's no longer feeling very safe, right? And we also look relationally. So, you know, maybe with another person, maybe eye contact might feel dangerous for some people, but for other people, eye contact might be a sign of safety, right? It's very like individualized. Just noticing how is your body reacting in these little like micro moments throughout the day. And then we also look environmentally. You know, if I walk into my house and it's a mess and there's clutter everywhere, that is registering as a sign of danger in my body. It comes up in the form of anxiety, like I'm stressed, right? So I'm not actually thinking that, oh, this feels dangerous, but my body thinks that it's dangerous. My chest feels tight. I have to take a big sigh. I'm agitated, right? And it's just a mess in my house. So to get people to start to think in these terms of safety and danger in a very binary way, the way that the nervous system is working, this is what I have them do. And then over time, you know, we start to notice, okay, well, what does make me feel safe? Okay, maybe for me, it's a really like clean space, right? Nothing's out. Maybe, you know, it's, you know, my partner is there and like he's in a good mood and we're having good conversation. Maybe,
I was just thinking fluffy blankets. Yeah. I would put that in my environmental safety. I would put fluffy blankets.
Right. Maybe, you know, in my body, it's like, okay, do I have the ability to take like a deep belly breath right now? Can I tap into like my diaphragm breathing? Like that'll be like a sign of safety for my body. Right. And so it's about being able to start to drill down in these little micro moments throughout your everyday life, like really mundane stuff, and say, okay, how is my body reacting in these little tiny moments? And once I have that kind of mapped out, can I start moving towards safety? Because we can't take steps towards safety if we don't know what safety looks like for our bodies, right?
Well, especially you said, since it's so individual for people.
It's so individual. Yes. I tell my clients, you know, we're building a personalized like nervous system map. We're going to map everything out, and then we're going to see, okay, how do I get from danger to safety? How do I got there? How do I get back?
Wow. I love that. That's such a good visual of the nervous system map. Okay, I got myself into danger. How do I get myself out of danger? And then being able to make that individualized plan, exit strategy, if you will.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, brilliant. So what do you see? And before I ask that question, do you find, because I find sometimes that people kind of want those big aha moments, you know, they're like, oh, like if things are too boring, then it's like, is it worth it? You know, do you find that you run into that sometimes?
I think that people come to this work when they're ready, and it's not something that you can make yourself ready for. Most of my clients come to me out of talk therapy, out of traditional talk therapy. And I think that, you know, a lot of talk therapists are not typically somatically trained. Some are, a lot aren't. They're typically using CBT methods, you know, very top down kind of processing, which is great. And it helps to kind of unlock that first layer for people. People come out of talk therapy with awareness. They understand why I am the way I am. I can, you know, I can look back at my childhood and I can say, okay, well, these things happened. I understand why I do the things that I do, but I can't change them. How do I change them? And somatic work really is about getting you from point A to point B, because now we're talking to the body. We're done talking to the mind. We've talked to the mind. We can talk to the mind all day. We'll talk it in circles. Mm-hmm. What is the body saying?
I think that that's, again, just knowledge bombs. this entire conversation. I'm just like, wow, that is one of the best ways that I've ever heard that explained ever. That is so true. Because yeah, you do. I mean, talk therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy, all really great, have such an important role to play. Mm-hmm. But definitely in my own experience as well, once that I was kind of, at some point you just get talked out. You're mm-hmm. just like, I'm tired of talking about this now. I feel like I know all of this now. And so what now? I'm still experiencing all of these things and I'm still having these things. I feel like there's more here. Intuitively, that was my personal experience. Intuitively, mm-hmm. I feel like there's more here. There's more depth here that I'm not touching. What is that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, absolutely. And I realize, you know, to your question earlier, I kind of went in a different direction, but, you know, about it being boring. I think that when people finally are in a place to come to this work, it's hardly ever boring, because you're constantly, if you're actually, you know, doing the work, if you're actually applying yourself here and you're showing up for it, you're constantly peeling back these layers and you're having these aha moments of oh my God, you know, once you actually get in touch with the body, I just think it's I'm biased because I'm a total nerd about this, but it's just the coolest thing ever. It's anything but boring, because you're getting to know yourself finally, outside of your conditioning. Mm-hmm. And it's just so cool.
Mm-hmm. I would have to completely and totally agree with you on that. So what do you see? So when you do this work with people, what are some of the results that you start seeing? What becomes possible for people? You know, how does actually doing the work impact people's lives?
Yeah. I mean, just from a health perspective, right? When we are able to get the nervous system to be able to tap more into that parasympathetic side, that place of safety, right? That's the parasympathetic. That is the place where your body can heal itself. It's the place where we can repair cell tissue. It's the place where, you know, the body can properly digest food and absorb nutrients. It's ideally where we want, your body to be a lot of the time. We have access to health in that place. And so, you know, from like a physical perspective, we get our health back on like a lot of different levels. And then from, you know, a more of like a personal development standpoint, we get choice. You know, more than anything, you get choice. You get to decide, who am I going to be? You know, we kind of get, one of my friends, she's also in this work, she refers to, you know, the core self as like our factory setting. Like, who were we before the world told us who we needed to be in order to, you know, be safe, right? And so that's the work. We're peeling back those layers. We're saying, who are we underneath all of these identities that we thought we had to be?
Ooh, yeah. Oh my gosh. Again, Megan, you keep saying things where I'm just like, oh my God, there's just so much juicy goodness in that I'm having a hard time responding. Cause I'm just, all I want to say is just, I agree. That's all I want to say. I agree. I also love the factory setting. I've never heard that analogy before. And I'm like, oh yeah. Like, that makes total sense. Like, who were we before we had all of these, you know, rules, for lack of a better word, like, this is how you should be, this is how you're supposed to be, and all the decisions that we have made, right, out of trauma and triggers. Like, I know that for myself, just putting this in less of a conceptual standpoint, more like in my life, I know for myself, like, when I was little, like, I decided that I needed to be strong and I needed to be smart, mm-hmm. right? Like, in order to survive, I need to be strong and I need to be smart. And not only do I need to be smart, but I need to be smarter than everyone.
Mm-hmm. And then you look at like, well, how does that play out? What does that mean to a child? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty wild. But, and that to your point earlier with like the talk therapy, where there's like, okay, like, I know that now. I know where that comes from. I know how that impacts me. I know the stories that I've made up around it. I can hear them. Like, when something happens, I'm like, oh, this is me trying to be smarter than everyone. Okay, I see. Mm-hmm. I see that. But then it's also like, at some point, I was just like, okay, it feels like there's more here. And then really being able to go into those deeper layers of like, oh, this is how my body reacts. Like, not just what my mind is telling me, but this is how my body reacts in those situations. And anyway, I just think that this work is so, so important, and I love everything that you're up to. And I think that it makes such a huge, I'm just going to advocate for you for a second, because I just think that this makes such a huge difference in people's lives. Yes. And I'm just like, yes, go to talk therapy, talk it out, figure it out, but like, do the body work. This is the juice. This is where it's at. Yeah. Yes. All right. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. So we're going to take another quick break. And then when we get back, we're going to start to wrap up, ask our end of episode questions. And then I'm going to hand it over to you and let people know how to get hold of you. Because I am sure that there are people who are listening to this episode that are like, I really need to talk to Megan. Obviously I need to talk to Megan. And so when we come back from break, we'll give you all of Megan's information, probably not her cell phone number, though I'm sure you know. Anyway, all right, we'll be right back.
Boy, does this feel like good times today. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I love it. This is a show that's going to invite all of you to open up your heart, because it's about dreams coming true. There's a road we get to take as we craft out and we lay a course that's in service of so many others. Sometimes the universe, God, whatever you believe in, have you ever wondered why, but better than why, or how the universe knows how to line things up in a way that gets you ready for the most expansive part of who you're going to become? This is the time to change. And gratitude, leading with love, opens up more expansive possibilities than you can imagine. Crust busting your way to an awesome life.
I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Damayanti, jewelry, clothing, and homewares, with inspiring Sanskrit messages of strength, love, and divine energy. Power words that shine a light on your soul path. Our jewelry is made in America and shipped directly from us to you. Damayanti, join us as we take our soul journey together. Go to damayanti.store now to find the special Sanskrit mantra that speaks to your soul.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek, the fourth Tuesday each month at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the golden age that provides truth and answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you monthly on TransformationTalkRadio.com on Knowledge Book Radio. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
Welcome back to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding in Love. And we are on our last segment for the day. Unfortunately, we were just talking on break about, oh my gosh, I can't believe that it's already, the time has just flown by. Nerding out about somatic work and relationships and really what's possible in going deeper into your body and then being able to operate in the world in just such a free way. I'm just going to say it that way. It's so freeing.
It's right? Freeing and it's expansive. And, I think for me personally in my own journey, it has led me to a place where I am so much more connected with my desire, you know, the things that I actually want in life, because I think that we can really distract ourselves from the things that we actually want, because they're scary. The things we actually want are scary. There's stakes to what we actually want in life, because if we don't get it, then it's really sad. And it's like, you know, if we work on cultivating enough capacity to be with the sad, then we can actually work towards cultivating enough capacity to go after the things that we really, really actually want, the things that really actually light us up.
Ooh, like I said, mic drop moments, all episode. Seriously, I felt that all the way, like I had like shivers up and down my body. And you sharing that. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, I can hardly add anything to that. I'm just going to start asking my questions. I'm like, do you want to leave the show? Because like this, that was amazing. but for real, like it's so true though, like being able to expand in both, or rather in all capacities, being able to go into the darker parts of ourselves does expand the light in ourselves as well, and vice versa, like expanding the light illuminates the dark as well. And so in expanding both capacities, you really see what you are capable of and then being able to create from there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Megan. So the end of show questions. First one is, what does love mean to you?
What does love mean? That's a really good question. So philosophical. I would say that to me, love is more of an action. than a feeling. I really love bell hooks' work. I don't know if you've read any of her books, but you know, she talks about love as like really this very actionable thing. It's not just a feeling, right? It's about respect and reciprocity, and deep, deep care. So I think like there are these components to love, and if they all aren't kind of there and like working with one another, then like, is it really love? I don't know. It's up to everyone's interpretation, but I really subscribe to it being like an actionable thing, like a state of being rather than like a feeling that you have about someone. You know, if I'm in, you know, my sense of love with myself, I can more easily love others, and it becomes like a state, something that you are.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yes. If people get nothing else, what do you hope that they got out of this episode?
I hope that I at least provided a little bit of a different mental model than people might be used to around behavior that we don't necessarily like about ourselves. You know, I think that was really the biggest takeaway for me for this work. You know, instead of beating myself up about behavior from myself that I don't like, that, you know, is in discord with my life, can I understand it from the angle of like, at one point this was useful to me, right? At one point, like, this was all I knew how to do, and it kept me moving through life. And so can I see it through that lens, and can I have compassion for that part of myself?
Wow, thank you. All right, next question is, what an action that people can take?
An action, like towards what?
Or just out of listening to this episode, what's an action that people could take?
I would say carve out time in your day to be present with your body. That can look like a lot of different things. It could look like meditation. It could look like stretching. It could look like breathing. It could look like, you know, sitting on the floor in your shower and just feeling the hot water on your skin. You know, just get in touch with your sensations in a way that feels good. And experience that.
Thank you. All right. What are you promoting and how can people find you?
Yeah. So I actually just finished releasing an online course that is completely self-led, and an ebook that it functions as a workbook. So each chapter kind of lays the foundation of information, and then there are, you know, journal prompts and exercises at the end of each chapter. So both of them work really nicely with one another, but they stand alone on their own as well. And I created both of these to be a more accessible way to work with some of these concepts. It is self-led because coaching can be expensive. You know, it is expensive to work with a practitioner. And if you have the means to do that, I strongly, strongly recommend it. But if you don't, or if you're not sure about this work, these are really good offerings to kind of like lay a foundation. You know, my goal with creating them was really to create enough of like a mental model around it, enough to like for your brain to kind of sink into, to, you know, then allow your body to like experience this information with like a deeper sense of surrender, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. And is that on your website?
It is on my website. My website is www.meganarrow.com, and that's Megan with an H.
Perfect. And then all of those links are in the show notes. So anyone who is interested, please go check it out. Click on the links, take the course. That's the action that I hope you take from this episode today. Megan, thank you so much for being here. It has been just a joy to have you on the show. Thank you for pouring your knowledge and your wisdom and all of your love bombs on us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I just want to leave everyone listening with, you know, I'm saying all of this from the perspective of, you know, a practitioner, but I'm also an individual who still works through this stuff, that it is, you know, it's a journey. It's not like you're, you know, you get to a certain place and you're healed and then it's done and you did it, you reached it, right? Like, I'm still someone, even with all of this knowledge, who does the work, who, you know, I'm not preaching from my mountain, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. No, your love and your care is absolutely apparent. So thank you so much. And thank you so much for everyone who is listening, watching. Remember to like, subscribe, turn on the notification button so you don't miss anything. We're live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Transformation Network Facebook page. And then we're aired every Thursday on YouTube and podcast. Again, all links are in the show notes. Until next time, everyone. Keep loving.
You have been listening to The Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding Love, with me, Elizabeth Cunningham. Tune in live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where we shed light on relationships, sex, love, and the ways we wish we could be but never thought were possible. Learn to love yourself and create the relationships you want. Connect with me at ElizabethAnnCunningham.com. That's ElizabethAnnCunningham.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.